MLP is a superior entertainment product. I really, really like the move to a better compact season. Confusion factor is going to be way less for 2025, which is exciting. They're having host teams. I do think that'll help the league with possible broadcast deals and stuff like that to get out there and like get the public engaged. I do think we're like ahead of the game this year already.
Eric Theis, welcome to the podcast, Behind the Panel.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, man.
Of course. I've been wanting to have you on the pod, whether it was this one or whether it was It Feels Right, for a little while now, just because you've been one of the, I would say you've been, not one of the, I'd say you've been the best kind of source of information following pro pickleball in the landscape and everything that's happening. So. And that's no easy task because there's a lot of people that follow it, but I think the amount of analysis, and you go pretty in depth on everything and stuff that I'm like, man, dude, I would love to like report that, but I would never like devote the time to do it. So big props to that. Yeah.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Some of the stuff I do is super easy because I've been watching so much pickleball and it's like, okay, I know this, so I can just write about it. But other stuff, like I'm working on an article right now that it's probably taking me 6 hours of like online sleuthing to like figure out some of the things going on. It's pro pickleball is in a very interesting space right now.
It is. And on that note, it felt like you kind of came a little bit out of nowhere. We just chatted before we hit record that you're based in Phoenix, and obviously I would say one of the bigger hotbeds of pickleball in the States, outside of, you know, and I'm talking not necessarily just pro players, but I'm talking about just pure participation. Like Utah, Phoenix is just ridiculous with how many courts they have. A little bit of it, I think, is snowbirds and, just how many courts communities have, but now it's public parks and now it's the indoor facilities. So obviously you've been around pickleball, but what brought you into kind of really analyzing the pro space, working with the Dink, and, you know, as a content creator, as a writer, what led you to this point, I suppose?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first and foremost, I don't have like a journalism background. I went to school for sports management and I have an MBA in leadership. Like, I have no journalism whatsoever. The only writing I do have in my like repertoire I was a professional writer for, I would say, 5 years at Grand Canyon University. So I was a corporate trainer and I would train people all the time. When you're training, you also have to have training materials. And so I was very like, I was one of the writers of all of the materials. So I'm very like grammar oriented, which is not good for journalism. So that's been a little bit different for me. Because pickleball is like way more fun than like, I could put a smiley emoji in my article and like people get it. Like, it's cool.
Yeah.
But to answer the question, so I love sports. Like, I grew up in upstate New York and pretty much any sport you could watch, I watched. And I will say this too, I love team sports. And so like, I don't know anything about tennis. I never played tennis. I like, unless it's outside of the, like, if it's outside of the top 10 players in the world, I probably don't even know their name.
Yeah.
But I grew up loving sports and loving stats. And at an early age, I got spoiled because I was in New York. So I like loved the Yankees when Derek Jeter was there. And so I got spoiled there, but I always loved stats. Like, I remember my dad said he came home one night and I was like 3.5. And I basically said something like, hey, if Charles Barkley gets two more rebounds, then he'll have another triple double this year. And like,
yeah.
A 3.5-year-old probably shouldn't know those things, right?
Yeah.
So I got into sports. I played sports throughout my entire life, really. I played baseball up until high school, basketball. I was a really bad basketball player, like so bad. And then I played soccer my whole life. And I was a soccer goalie. And I played soccer in college all 4 years. I went to a small D3 school. I was a captain of the team the last 2 years, and I also played a year of lacrosse as well.
Cool. What year did you graduate college?
I graduated in 2009, and then I moved out to Phoenix then. So I've been in Phoenix for 15 years, and I've done a lot of corporate America type stuff, but I've also, the entire time since, actually during college, and this is actually something I would really love to see implemented in pickleball. During college, I got 2 coaching licenses for soccer. So there's plenty of like coaching certifications in pickleball, but I think it could be expanded no matter which one you do. I think there should be levels to it. And there are, but in soccer, it's kind of crazy. So I got my E license and then my D license before I even graduated college. And it goes all the way up to A and then senior A and all of that. But since then, I've been a fairly high-level goalkeeper coach in Arizona, coaching pretty much since then. So I've been coaching for 15 years. I'm super analytical with like movement and just the nuance of things. And so, my mother-in-law got me into pickleball. She was like playing pickleball in like 2016, I want to say, her twin sister. And I was like, dude, no way. Like, no way am I doing this. So it took until like 2020. And then, she asked me to come play with her and like her group of old lady friends. And I did. And then I got hooked.
Yeah. Cause they beat you up.
It's very true. So if anybody's in the Arizona area, you want some like humbleness, any Saturday you want, just go out to the Surprise City courts and you will definitely get your ass kicked by 2 65-year-olds with multiple knee braces and elbow braces and all of that. It's
love it.
It's pretty amazing. So I started watching MLP. I loved MLP because of the team aspect, pro pickleball just in general, because I was like into it. And I forget when, but it's probably close to 2 years ago now. I was like, there was something happening with MLP. I think it was like maybe the season 1 draft of 2023. And like, I think that was just when Josh Gartman's stopped doing as much on his blog.
Yeah.
And I was like reading and writing, or I was reading and watching a whole bunch of his stuff. And I was like, this dude is like really good. And like, it gives, giving me like a actual sports information. Did I lose you?
We're good.
I'm back.
Yeah. You're back. And just a heads up. Like, we'll have like Selkirk will edit this, clean it up. So, well, let's not stress about like if there's gaps or anything like that. So they'll edit this out. I would say even if it seems like you're frozen, keep talking, because on the actual recording, it'll come through as pretty clean. I don't know how they do that. But it'll come through clean. And if I don't catch enough of it, I'll just ask you and you can say it again, but we're all good. Like last I've heard was Gartman was really good at what he was doing.
Oh,
it's kind of the time he stopped.
Yeah. So yeah, Josh was doing a really great job in like providing real sports analysis that I was kind of used to from the team aspect. And then the draft was happening, or I don't remember exactly when it was, but I just was like, I know I could write an article about like 5 challenger guys that could go up, or 5 premier guys that could go down or something. So
yeah,
on a whim, I wrote like 2 or 3 articles in like, and just left them. And I was like, man, maybe somebody would do, I don't know. And then on a whim, I just emailed Thomas and I said, hey, I don't know if you're interested in any of this content, but here's an article I wrote about an upcoming draft or something. Boy. And within 2 days, he was like, dude, I love this. And I just published it. And I was like, what did you just say? So, and then I just kept doing it. So it wasn't like super consistent at the start, but like this year I told myself I really wanted to be consistent. So I pretty much every single pro tournament that existed this year, I can think of one that I didn't do, but every other one, I did a tournament preview, a tournament recap. And then I probably did like 15 player profiles, which were super fun.
Yep.
And I've also done a whole bunch of analysis type of articles in MLP.
And those are the ones that I'm typically like pretty impressed with, because like you're digging into like statistical like analysis and stuff, which isn't just like you can't, like you mentioned before, you, even though you're watching a lot of pickleball, it's easier to write about, but it's not easy when you have to dig into like real stats and real analysis in terms of that stuff. Because like, I'll talk about pro pickleball all day of like what I saw, like what I watched, what I observed, but I won't go into the statistical stuff where I have to like do like Eric Tice level research.
Yeah. So, I mean, because I like the stats and the numbers, it's fun for me, but like there aren't very good stats out there at all. I mean, no disrespect when I talk about this, but
yeah,
you know, Major League Pickleball has like the players are ranked by the points they scored, not even like the match,
it's
so
the
matches
bad, yeah,
that they have. And like, you know, Maddie Pickles has a very similar spreadsheet to me, where like if you don't have either my spreadsheet or his spreadsheet, maybe two other people have them, but like you don't know how well, I don't know, and Eric Lang did in men's doubles versus how he did in mixed doubles. Like you.
Yeah. Right.
So
you're looking at the overall.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but it was very easy for me to like make some statistical Excel sheets, because I was like, as I'm writing about these events, especially in MLP, I'm like, man, I really wish I knew blah, blah, blah. So then I just started keeping track of, but like, I guarantee I'm the only person in the world that kept track of every single Dreambreaker point this year. Like I would go back, and I would watch every single one. It would be like, okay, Anna Lee got three there and the other person got one.
Yeah.
Tally it up every single event. So I,
did you find any interesting takeaways from going through that Dreambreaker analysis that maybe, you know, people that are familiar with MLP, have watched MLP, would be surprised by?
I'm trying to think right off the top of my head.
Maybe somebody that's historically doesn't play singles in tournaments, but performed really well, or vice versa, somebody that's, you know, a very, very good singles player in tournaments that performed very poorly.
Got it. Okay. 1 second.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Just pull up the spreadsheet. Unbelievable.
I have it.
It's ready to go. Beautiful.
Let's see here.
What are your thoughts on, as you're pulling that up, off the cuff, what are your thoughts on, we've talked about kind of statistical analysis and kind of how it's lacking in the game. Real Clear Stats has done what I feel like a pretty good job from the get-go in terms of following MLP. A little bit of the frustration is, well, one, getting, because I feel like when I was playing MLP, for example, I would have not necessarily great win-loss records, but from Real Clear Stats perspective, in terms of my performance, it would be like consistently top five in the league out of both genders. But my win-loss record wouldn't reflect that, whether it was just, you know, a thing of partnerships, a team thing, whatever it may be. So I found that super useful, but I don't think that it had really gained traction with other people, fought like whether it was GMs, whether it was owners, whether it was other players, it didn't feel like they would really consider that or take that into account, when in my eyes it's like, okay, well, if they're tracking how this player plays like on a really granular point level, on speed ups, on counters, on errors, on winners, etc., forced errors, to me it was really granular and really telling, but it didn't feel like it gained traction.
Yeah. You make a really good point there. A couple things that I think of when you say that. First of all, not everybody in pro, especially MLP, not every GM is like super analytical. And if you put too many numbers in front of somebody, I don't know what's going on. So I do think, I've talked to Ben at Real Clear Stats about this, and I do think, if there are those people, they need some sort of buffer. Like, I feel like I'm actually a pretty good buffer just because of Ben has done a really great job. And sometimes he helps me out with my articles, and we've partnered together where, like, for example, when the Flash beat the Fives in the finals, right? Like, he had all this analysis done, all of that, like statistical analysis, that the in-depth stuff that you're talking about, he had that done the next day. And so what he did was, you know, somebody would have said, like, hey, here are the stats I think you should have, and here's like just five pieces and write about those, right? But Ben was like, listen, here's all of my stats, all of the stats. I'm not going to tell you what to write about, because I want you to find those stats and things that are important, what you think help tell that storyline. And so I think Real Clear Stats is super duper important on a player by player level and a team by team level, because, you know, the best example, and obviously pickleball, especially MLP, is recency bias, right? But let's use an easy example of this year, like Zane, right? Zane's on the winningest team in pickleball in an MLP during the regular season, right? But if you look at his like win-loss percentage, it's not good. It's not good at all. He's talked about it. Like, that was the game plan for the team. And so if you're a GM who's just looking at like a win-loss from last year, or even points for, points against, and you're not using some sort of individualized stats to tell you what the actual story was, then you could be, and obviously Zane is like the most extreme example.
Sure.
But even if you're caught on a above average team with like one of your partners, you and that partner don't click as well, your stats could be pretty bad pretty quickly. And then all of a sudden, you know, I think that the Real Clear Stats needs to be implemented by a lot more teams. If I had any suggestions, it doesn't seem like it costs that much to get like great statistical analysis on players. And sometimes it's not going to be like, oh my gosh, this is by far the best player. But if you're choosing, and especially GMs are usually choosing between, hey, I want this type of player.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a right side guy, and we're in the third round or whatever. Obviously, that's not going to be
28 in a real draft. But we have this player versus this player, and we know
this and this and this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be nice to have a little bit more in depth versus like, oh, this person made it to the semis of last week's tournament, and we should pick that person instead of this other person who statistically has had a much better performance over the long term versus the kind of the recency bias, like you mentioned.
Or maybe we don't pick somebody that has a really high duper that we've never seen play before, like last year. In 2023, yep. That happened a couple of times, and I was like,
yep.
I have over 300 people in my, at least 300 players in my like analysis in my Excel sheets. This person is not in them one time. I don't think that this is,
yeah, yeah.
I don't think this is a good idea.
Yeah. But that is, it is interesting when you go, like, even with how MLP was kind of structured this year, where you had at the end of the year, we saw a bunch of fill-ins, a bunch of people opted out of not playing because maybe they hit their contractual obligations in terms of events played, etc. One thing that I always find interesting is that at the premier level, you can have, let's call it really honestly, like fringe challenger guys, challenger or not even on a team, that can go into premier and perform just fine. And we see that, like, I've seen that so many times where it's like, you know, you have a random guy that wasn't even on a challenger team. He's playing premier now and he's holding up just fine. What do you think about that? And what do you think attributes? Is it the rally scoring aspect? Is it that it's harder to get, like there's no switching, you know, because you're staying on your own side? Like, what can you attribute that to?
Honestly, I know this is not the direction you want to go, but I would attribute that 100% to the player pool. right? Like, the on the guy side, you know, let's take, I don't know, let's go from the 15th best guy down to like the 50th guy.
It's a small gap, smaller gap.
It's a very small gap compared to the same thing on the women's side.
100%. So yeah, it's just depth and the margins are so small from 50 to 15, honestly.
Right. And the other thing is this, like, the one that stands out to me that held up the best in terms of like going and playing on a premier team, I think there was three guys right off the top of my head. It was Roscoe, Blaine, and Anderson Scarpa. Those are the three. Maybe there was more, but whatever.
Those are good examples. Yeah.
Scarpa probably did the best, I would say, when he was in premier. And he is super versatile, right? Like, he's not just a left side guy. He's not just a right side guy. He can dink all day on the right, but if you want him to play the left, he can, and he's good. He can get bigger and mixed. Like, he's got a full skill set, whereas somebody that maybe is drafted challenger might have been drafted challenger for a very specific reason because you're partnering with so-and-so, and we need this skill set. But they're after challenger, there's still plenty of guys out there that have a fuller skill set. And I see it all the day in the up and coming game. I'm sure you see it when you're playing. Like, there are guys now that want to be right side kings.
Yeah.
And then there's like guys that are like, okay, I'm super athletic, I'm going to stay on the left. But then there's also a mix of like, okay, I'm just going to learn to be the best pickleball player I can be.
Sure.
And I don't know if one of those ways is right or wrong. I think every player has to find that for themselves. But I think that's a good way to get drafted, right? Like, being a specialist could be good, especially once MLP moves to a larger roster. I don't know when that'll be, but if that were to happen, a specialist may work. But also that, like, all like the what's the word? The all around player, I guess.
Sure.
Could also have a really great role, because then it's like, okay,
they can fill in anywhere.
Options. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Hey, have you heard of the new Play More app?
No, what is it?
Basically, the Play More app is like a stress-free scheduling app for pickleballers. So I don't know, we've struggled a lot in group text trying to organize play. You'll set it up and somebody will just like the text. And I'm like, does that actually mean you're coming or not?
Yeah, and it's like, you never know how many people you have, like what rating they are. It's kind of annoying.
It can kind of just be a nightmare to try to organize groups, because group texts are just not fun. So basically, the Play More app lets you send out invitations. You get an RSVP list. If somebody doesn't show, there's a wait list that will actually like put somebody right into.
No way.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Dang, that's awesome. What's it called?
It's called the Play More app. So you should download it at the App Store, or you can go to getplaymore.com if you want to look at it online.
That's interesting, because with MLP, like, historically, you've been like, okay, we want to really get very specific with each role in the team. Like, we want a very specific right side player and men's that can also play decently on the left and mix, but we need them to be very good on the right side, which a lot of guys are, you know, just play the left, just play the right, and then it's very tough to get that mix point because they're not used to playing the left. So we saw it a little bit with the hard H, right? And mixed, like, that was probably their weakest point, but very, very strong in men's because they had very specific roles. And, you know, Eric's playing the right in men's a lot. So he's playing left. He's playing less on the left side, which, you know, of course attributes to, you know, just not having the reps on the left, even if you're playing Mitzler time. Whereas in Max is, you know, super athletic, playing the left and mixed and men's. So a little bit of an easier transition. I don't quite know. I think moving forward, well, if the rosters get bigger, right? Like, I think you would want to have a little bit more of a specialized, whereas in like a smaller roster, you want a little bit more of a well-rounded player that can fill in a couple spots. But if the rosters, you know, goes from four to call it six or eight or whatever, then you can have just like a right side king that just is really, really good on the right and men's, maybe not even plays mixed. You have another player that plays mixed. So I like the bigger roster aspect of MLP and where that might go, because I think it creates a lot more interesting storylines and scenarios of like how to plug in players.
Right. Yeah. For example, in the playoffs, although I love the playoffs and I love the 2 out of 3, for the most part, I would say at least 80% of the mixed matchups were the same from match to match. And so I think that would cause a lot more like storytelling and like cool storylines of like, hey, well, this coach, you know, they didn't like how they played this game, and the coach decided this person's going in for this person or something. You know, I think that could definitely provide better storylines.
I agree. And I think it would be pretty fun to not allow the same team to be played. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you can only play this team once out of the best out of three. Like, plan accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different options, but I like seeing the different matchups for sure.
What do you, just getting back to more of like a, you know, a zoomed out view of everything that's happening. Obviously, you like team sports. I've always been a huge advocate of, I think this team format should be the future of pro pickleball. I think it should be, to me, it should be the primary product. I think it creates the best stories. I think it creates the most variety. I think having the home and away eventually, where we're actually leveraging, you know, cities and home arenas and home venues, is what I envision the future of pro pickleball, what it should be in a perfect utopian world. We're going to more of a compact MLP specific season instead of having it kind of dispersed throughout the year where it's harder to track and follow. I think it's a great move. But I do feel like a lot of the interest, just from people I've talked to, whether it is other pros or whether it's casual viewers at my local YMCA where I play in here in Ponte Vedra, people had a really tough time keeping up with MLP this year. And I know they had to throw it together because of the merger and things happened very last second. But it did feel like interest waned a little bit, and it's going to take some rebuilding to get it to where it needs to be. What's your view of the overall landscape of how MLP fits into pro pickleball, you know, in comparison to what they're doing with the PPA tour, with a bunch of other tours happening with APP and then the international stuff that's happening? Will MLP kind of come to the top, or will it kind of die out?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I am also in the same boat. I think MLP is a superior entertainment product. I really, really liked the move to a better compact season. Couple reasons. A, first and foremost, like you said, it was difficult to follow, right? It's like, play one MLP. Well, not everybody plays one MLP event. 15 teams play an MLP event, and then the next week we have PPA, then we have a PPA slam, then we have a break, then we have another 15, but some of the 15 did play, but now they don't play. And like, it just, and then very quickly, I think it was me and Real Clear Stats, like when we were after like the second or third event, I was like, okay, this team has played 12 matches and this team has played 3.
Yeah.
There is no way the general public will understand what's happening unless I do a points per match.
Yeah.
And like, we basically forced MLP to put that stat in so that they could find like who is winning actually. And so it was very confusing. It was confusing for me. I cover every single event. I know like it was like, what is going on right now?
Yeah.
You know? So I think a confusion factor is going to be way less for 2025, which is exciting. B, I also love the timing of it in terms, and now I know we're not, listen, MLP is not like actually competing with the NFL for viewership or the NBA for viewership. I get that. But the summer is a dead zone for pro sports in general. It's basically like we're competing with baseball.
And nobody's watching regular season baseball. Not really.
I try sometimes.
I try too. It's not. It's like, okay, well, maybe I'll just come back when there's 10 games left in the regular season and then there's a playoff race. But that middle of the season, early, like spring training, at it, like the home openers, The first month's exciting because you got to kind of see where everybody's stacking up. The last month's exciting because you see where everybody's ending up. But that middle, like you're absolutely right. That middle period of summer is like it's tough to watch.
And so, you know, I do think that'll help the league with possible broadcast deals and stuff like that. So
yeah,
all of that I think is great. I also think it's great that they're having host teams in those cities host those events. I think that puts an onus on the owners themselves and the teams to get out there and like get the public engaged in this a little bit more than a, you know, just a general MLP marketing team could do, you know, on an individual basis. So I really like the direction MLP is going. If definitely felt like it was kind of by the wayside last year just because of the timing. And people talk about that all the time about like, oh, the merger and the timing, and it's just like a known thing. But I just want to touch on that specifically, right? Yeah. Like the merger happened, I think, in like March of 2024, right? So that means, and they ended in November. That means they had 7 months of, first of all, MLP didn't know if it was going to exist. So it probably wasn't booking locations, right?
Couldn't.
So now we're in March and we need a location in May. Well, two in May, two in June. And all of a sudden now it goes from we're not scheduling anything to we need to book large venues that can seat 1,000 people in a 6 month span and try to cut costs as much as we possibly can. Like, that was they were starting way behind the eight ball there for last year. And I do think we're like ahead of the game this year already.
Yeah. I still think the pickleball would be a much better place if MLP just operated independently and did their own thing. But it didn't happen and we're not there. But we see.
Let's back up. If you're saying if the merger didn't happen, I don't know, because if MLP didn't have the PPA signed players, I don't know what the product.
No.
Obviously, it's a good.
I'm saying everybody that signed with MLP originally last August. If they had that roster, they basically just didn't have, honestly, they just didn't have Annalie and Ben. Nobody else really mattered. Like, I say nobody else really mattered. Great players. But in terms of the deal, in terms of the viewership, in terms of watching, it was kind of inconsequential. And MLP had everybody else. They had Anna Bright. Yeah. They had Rachel. They had James Ignatowicz. They had Riley. They had JW, Dylan. They had everybody. They just didn't have Annalie and Ben. So in terms of the product, I think the product would have been just fine. And what would PPA have done? They would have just watched, you know, Annalie and Ben cruise to every single final. Like, how boring would that be? So I think if MLP had that product with those players, easily a superior product, easily Pro Pickleball is in a better place in terms of viewership, in terms of what the product could have been. Obviously, incredibly hypothetical because we'll never know.
I've
always said it, and I think in a perfect world, you have MLP as the premier product, and then you have another tour running tournaments alongside it, and players aren't exclusive to MLP. If there's no conflicting dates, there's no conflicting, you know, commitments, they play the tournaments, and viewers get best of both worlds. They get to, you know, cheer for their favorite teams, and then they get to watch their favorite players play in events and tournaments when they're not playing in the team events.
Yeah. I agree completely. I'd love the model to be, I think Zane talked about it, but I'd love the model to be eventually, once we get out of these contracts where the leagues are paying these contracts, right? Because that has happened in multiple sports throughout like the entirety of sports.
Yeah.
The most glaring one recently was MLS, pro soccer. They used to pay the players until they got to a point where the franchises could pay. So once we get past these deals,
the leagues owning the players.
Right. And it makes way more sense to me that the teams have their, you know, you structure a salary cap and all of those things you need, but the teams pay those players whatever their guaranteed salary is, and then they could go win money on the PPA tour, APP tour, whatever it is. And then it's a best of both worlds in my mind, because now you have some sort of guarantee from the team, and you can make money if you want to win.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I don't mind having a ton of PPA tournaments. It's just like, you know, if the thing is, if you're going to have a ton of them, like let's say they bumped it up to 30 in 2026, just don't make every player play every event, you know, keep it at an 18 to 20. And then all of a sudden the mid to lower level players may win on a weekend where the top 10 don't want to play because they just played back to back on a weekend or whatever. So I don't know. I just
saw that in Daytona, right?
Right. Exactly. And that was so fun. And I wasn't even sure about that one. Like, I was like, I hope somebody shows up to play. And like, it's not just a boring, but like,
I think they're more fun.
I
think they're more fun, to be honest. Like I agree. I think I have no problem with tons of tournaments being scheduled and, you know, not everybody showing up to all the tournaments. It's very, very similar to tennis, right? Like, you'll have lower ranked players be a top five seed at a 250 event tennis, because the top players aren't coming unless they get a ridiculous guarantee or an appearance fee. But you get to see different results. You get to see different players shine. You get to see up and comers like get confidence because they're going deep into a tournament, like CJ Klinger, for example. Like what a great tournament for him, and to watch him with Andre, so fun to watch. And yeah, I couldn't agree more. I am curious on your take on the salary aspect and the guaranteed money aspect and how that affects one, I guess, hunger and motivation for some players in tournaments. And if you think, I've been very outspoken, I feel like it's terrible for the game and terrible for, I think a key ingredient for getting viewership is having something at stake while a viewer is watching a game, a match, a tournament, whatever it is. Like, you want to know that there's something on the line, there's something at stake for these players. Like, and I would say in most of these tournaments, there's not a lot at stake. You know, you're getting your money regardless. So money's not always the carrot. You know, oftentimes there's other carrots, but in a sport where I guess I would say players are incredibly overpaid for, you know, there's articles out there that are like, you know, how pro women's athletes stack up in terms of earnings, right? And you have a bunch of female pickleball players above like well-known athletes in other sports that are in the Olympics. And it's like, that's not something to brag about, guys. That's, to me, that just shows like how bad of deals and how bad of economics that these leagues and tours have put into place, because they're not worth it. They're not bringing that money back. There's no ROI there.
Right. Yeah. I definitely think for sure, 100%, the guaranteed contracts have hurt a little bit of the competitiveness of certain players. There are definitely those players that don't, like, they just don't care and they want to win, and they are going to go out and play. Like, I mean, I don't think Fed missed an event this year.
Yeah. I mean, talking
not
about
only
just
did
like
he not miss an
consummate,
event, like
consummate he, professional, just
yeah. And he plays singles. He never missed like, you know, there's plenty of guys that made most tournaments, but he's not only is he playing singles, those
going deep
finish he got was fourth. He's had to play every single championship Sunday. That's like 23 or 24 events. And it's like, so he's got the drive, obviously, right? But then I'm not going to like call out any players, but there's players that sign large contracts that are playing their bare minimum in terms of the contract number.
Yeah.
I don't think make a championship Sunday.
Yeah.
Maybe one or two. And it's like, okay, you're cashing in now, which great, you know, good on you. You played the game well.
After
sure, like
in 2 years, what happens in a year? Yeah.
I mean, I think there's going to be a big wake-up call for a bunch of players in 2 years. I think there's so many hungry players out there that are really good right now that the UPA is not signing, because I think they have, you know, they don't want to add on contracts and contracts and contracts, but there's plenty of really good players right now that want a contract. And they're going to be hungrier than some of these players that have been riding their coattails a little bit in terms of their previous success. So,
yeah,
I don't love that aspect of it. In terms of, you don't really see in other sports, even if money is not on the line, for the very most part, you don't see people kind of giving up in the middle of a game or something like that. And I definitely saw that a bunch this year.
Yeah, same. And that's not even to mention, you're talking about the hunger of players that aren't signed or aren't getting contracts right now in the States. Like, man, in 2 years, like, I've seen the growth from even just going to India for the first time last year to going back this year, call it a full year. And some of those players that I saw for the first time that had never had exposure to like any American coaching, any pros coming over, they've watched YouTube, right? And they've studied as much as they can, watching online from India and watching the tours and watching tutorials and clinics and videos online. But to actually be there and to see the excitement of having somebody there to coach them that's played tours and played MLP and all that stuff, that they were so stoked and so grateful and so hungry. And that's the difference I see over there versus over here, is like these players have such a hunger. And we're talking about like there's three pro Indian leagues right now, right? You have the PWR, you have Global, you have World Pickleball League. And we're talking like a lot of Indian players are going to play these leagues, and we're talking like life-changing money for them and their families. And like pickleball is not like tennis where it's a very exclusive sport. Like you can, in tennis in India, you have to come from some money to be able to participate and play to get going in it, right? To afford lessons. Yep. Pickleball, much more accessible, right? So you have people that aren't coming from wealthier families. They're like, to even get to train, they're on scholarship from some of these programs in India and getting comp stuff. So to get like to even be drafted in one of these leagues is life-changing money for them. So the I think about the hunger of those players versus like the well-fed fat people that are, you know, on these fat contracts, not fat people, people that are on fat contracts over here that like don't have that push and that hunger. Who do you think is going to come out on top? Like the hungry person is always going to come out on top. They're going to fight.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting what happens in like mid to late 2025 going into 2026, when I think these players are going to be like, oh, right, my contract is up in a year and a half. If I don't have any results, I think some of them are going to start training again and like really getting into it. But are they going to be able to get back? I mean, with the game changing as much as it, even in the last year, you could argue with the paddles, like, the game has completely changed. It's very, I would say it's very difficult right now to be like, oh, I was good 2 years ago. I could just train a bunch and get really good again. Like, I don't think you're going to be fine. Like, you need a larger skill set. And everybody else is training 6 hours a day too. Like if you're not one of those, you're falling behind.
Absolutely. There's absolutely no doubt. And I think, I don't think people are, you look at India, they're doing it full time. They're like, and that's just India. Look at like, let's look at all the Asian countries that have all the badminton.
Yeah.
So they are racket sports, paddle sports. Like that is what they do. And I think once like India comes in, it's going to be silly.
I think,
definitely India, right now, once China comes in.
Yeah. I knew what you meant. So in Asia, Australia is probably the furthest along right now, just because they've had more experience with more coaches and all of that than India. But like the sleeping giant that no one really talks about, which is strange, is China. Like no one really knows what's going on there. I know Megan and Ryler went there and did some clinics, but like if we get China involved here, it's going to be crazy in the next 2 to 3 years. And I think they already are. I think they're just a sleeping giant that's waiting. Once they get some good players that are like high level and they start traveling, I think we're going to see that very quickly.
I agree. And I think there are things happening kind of behind the scenes, of course, right?
I'm sure there is. Yeah,
it's China. But just to get back to your journey a little bit, what are you like? You found pickleball. You found kind of like your role in terms of providing value and content and data and stories, and you've done a great job. So props to Famous One for taking you on and letting you get the reach that the Dink has, because I think that's been super valuable. What's your goal within pickleball? You personally, not kind of the landscape, but like you're creating content now, you're writing great stuff. Where do you see kind of your future in pickleball? And is it a full-time thing? Is it, yeah, where do you hope to land?
Good question. I don't really know where that lands, because pickleball is changing all the time. Needs are changing all the time. I've been a guest on a couple of podcasts. I would like to make that more regular, whether I get my own podcast or something like that. I think, I really enjoy writing about the tournaments and previews and recaps and stuff. But I think, Zane did a really good job of like, I'm going to hang my head out of my apartment and do a 2-minute video on what happened this weekend in a PPA. And I was like, that's easy. Like I could do that. So I don't know. I would like to get my face out there a little bit more, just because I think that helps the reach for sure. Yep. So I'd like to start doing some more podcasting, maybe my own, and then see where it goes from there.
I love it. We'll have to have you as like a regular chime in on It Feels Right, because like the one thing Adam and I lack is specifics and like actual data. Like we'll talk about like what happened this past weekend. We'll get the wins and losses right, typically. But we won't have like in-depth analysis. Like Adam's watching every match. He's commentating most matches. So he has a very good sense of like what's happening on court, what the patterns are, what's happening. Like, but what we don't have is kind of that statistical analysis of what happened throughout a tournament and kind of the interesting data points there. So would love to have you as like a regular that comes in and talks about that stuff on the podcast, just to give a little bit more, I guess.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you guys are like, yeah, sometimes you're like, I think so-and-so did this. And I was like, nope, no, they didn't do that. But yeah, I'd love to join anytime you guys want me. I'm happy to join.
Yeah. Just in terms of getting your face out there. Like, I think that's somewhere we could absolutely help. And you'd bring a lot of value that, you bring real data instead of made up data.
Made up. I mean, hey, I'm half the data I make up too. So.
We'll love it. Well, I thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and your takes on where pickleball is and where it's going. Really appreciate it. I think you've done probably the best job in terms of reporting on pickleball and pro pickleball. And I hope you keep doing it and bringing value to all the fans out there.
Thanks, Rob. Really appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Eric.